Ladies and gentlemen, repeat after me. Final Friday.
Hello, world. I'm your wild girl. Like it's Jerry Bob. Jerry Bob. Jerry Bob. Jerry Bob. Jerry Bob. Jerry Bob.
That is Cherry Bomb by The Runaways. It rocketed the band of young women from small clubs to major stadiums, and out front screaming that instant classic was then 15-year-old Cherie Curry, who joins us on this Vinyl Friday. Cherie, it's so nice to talk to you.
Well, thank you, Russell. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Cherie, that voice is incredible for a teenager. How did you end up on that stage? How did you end up with the Runaways?
It was just timing. It was just luck. I just happened to be wanting to be in a rock and roll band at the time, and they approached me at a place called the Sugar Shack. It was an under 21 club, and they just liked my look. And Kim approached me and said, "Can you sing or play an instrument?" And I said, "Well, I could sing a little. I mean, I'd never sang like in front of anybody besides like the Kiwanis Club. Excuse me, Kiwanis Club."
Thank you for trying to connect with our audience.
But, you know, I never really sang until I got in the Runaways.
So tell us about the audition that you did.
Well, they had asked me to learn a Susie Quattro song, which I was a huge, and still am a huge Susie Quattro fan. But I think they expected me to pick Can the Can or Your Mama Won't Like Me, but I picked Fever, probably because I came from a background of Dean Martin and, you know, the Andrews Sisters. So they were not happy with that choice. And so Kim, who is such a brilliant writer, pulled Joan aside, and they went inside the house. And in 20 minutes, they came out with Cherry Bomb. And they gave me the lyrics and kind of a little bit of guidance. They didn't really know really how the song was going to turn out. But, you know, I kind of made it my own.
When you talk of Kim, we're talking about Kim Fowler, and Joan is Joan Jett. They just popped off for 20 minutes, came back with that song. And, I mean, that's it. I love these stories. I kind of hate these stories because it makes me feel so inadequate, you know, that what do I do? What do I do with my 20 minutes?
Oh, well, I'm sure there's a lot that you could do with that 20 minutes.
What about the song itself? It stands the test of time, which, again, is bizarre when you think about how quickly it was cobbled together. What does it mean to you?
Well, you know, I really thought the Runaways were all but forgotten back in the late 90s. I thought we'd been, you know, here was Madonna claiming that she was the first to wear a corset. I knew she knew she was wrong. I knew she knew who the Runaways were. But, you know, I just kind of felt like we'd been forgotten. But, you know, I didn't even look at any video or listen to our songs or anything for a couple of decades. But then when I was approached about the film, The Runaways, I really realized then that there was a big fan base out there. I was really taken by it. And then for them to put it in Guardians of the Galaxy, it just opened a whole new generation of people that now know about this band.
Isn't that lovely? And to take us back to the heyday, because you were playing with people like the Ramones, Van Halen, Cheap Trick, Blondie, and you're a teenager at the time. I imagine for someone so young, that's a quick rise in your fame and knocking around with those kind of people would probably be a fair bit for a young person to take in.
Well, the thing is that nobody was really big at the time. In fact, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers opened for us. Cheap Trick, we brought Cheap Trick out here to Los Angeles to open for us at the Starwood and also the Santa Monica Civic Center. I mean, nobody had their big hits yet. So we were just a bunch of young people kicking around and supporting each other, and it was terrific.
You sort of get the impression that at the same time as you were successful, somehow you were threatening a band of girls sort of taking over the world. What was it about the Runaways, do you think, that was threatening to people?
Well, I think that, of course, Susie Quattro had really kicked that door open that made people focus that this little tiny thing in a leather jumpsuit with a huge bass that was almost bigger than her could be that dynamic and command an audience of thousands and thousands of people. She was Justin Stiller is amazing. And so I think a lot of the young bands that we were playing with throughout the USA, you know, they just couldn't take us seriously. I mean, and if I put myself in their shoes, you know, I would have gone, gosh, a bunch of teenage girls, this is a novelty. But after we'd done our shows, something clicked. They got why we were doing it. And you know what? We were pretty good. We meant business. I mean, we were up there. We knew that you know, things were stacked against us, that people were not going to take us seriously. We're only 16 years old. I mean, honestly, when my son was 16, he was asked to go on tour with his cousin, Trevor Lukather, and I said, how would you like your no, fast or slow? But I ended up taking him on tour with me, and now he's been touring on his own, and he's a seasoned tour musician at this point. But the thing is that I totally understand why they felt that we were kind of a joke, but they had a different opinion after they saw our show.
What about, I mean, the window was open. You produced three albums, The Runaways, Queens of Noise, Live in Japan, but then you set out on your own, Cherie. Why did you fly the nest?
Well, you know what? We didn't have anybody. We didn't have parents on the road with us. We had nobody to moderate these deep-seated jealousies, and we weren't speaking, really. Nobody that could guide us. So it became toxic. I mean, it just was an ugly situation. We didn't like each other anymore. And that's what happens when you're young and you don't know how to talk things out. Mm. You know, we weren't adults. You know, we were kids. And you know what? I come from a very loving family. I just had enough. Lita came and kicked the door in and threatened me and said, it's your family or the band. And I just said, well, that's all I need. I'm gone. I mean, we were at that point anyway. Had we had somebody to sit us down and let us discuss whatever problems we thought we were having with each other, you know, things might have been different, but we didn't.
Cherie Curry is our guest on this Vinyl Friday. She's from The Runaways. It's a remarkable story, you know, the world stage at 15. And then I guess what followed, I suppose you'd describe as some fairly dark times, drugs, manipulation, I guess, as well, being a child in the rock and roll world is, I imagine, not easy.
Well, you know, I really don't know so much about the manipulation part. I mean, we knew everything we were doing. We were being ripped off, that's for sure. I mean, we weren't seeing any money. All of our royalties were being taken by the record company and Kim Fowley. And I guess that was kind of par for the course in those days. We were definitely taken advantage of, for sure. But we did fix that in the late 90s. We sued and we got royalties, back royalties, and we got the name The Runaways awarded to us. But, you know, it was just a different time. The 70s was different. A lot of drugs. If you didn't do drugs, there was something wrong with you. But the thing is that I come from, you know, an alcoholic family tree. And my father died of alcoholism. And so the drugs really took hold of me. And it wasn't until 1984 that I really knew that if I didn't get help, I was not going to make it. I mean, it's a progressive disease. So I did get help, and I became a drug counselor for young adults and kids. And it's amazing how young they can start, you know?
I'm Cherie Curry's our guest this Vinyl Friday. Such a thrill to be able to talk to you this morning. Let's fast forward to Boulevards of Splendor is an album that, in fact, thankfully, you released initially on vinyl, which, of course, we're always tickled about because we do have a turntable in the studio that we still use. But the battle to get this album finished was quite a long one and incident, you know, rich. Tell us about the chainsaw carving.
Well, I've been a chainsaw artist now for almost 20 years. Of course, I'm not one of those people that feels like, well, if I can't be a singer, I'm just going to go die in the street. I mean, the thing is that I totally understand this business, and I know that that I was just drawn to art, and I mean, it just basically took me over. wasn't something that I actually set out to do. I happened to be going to the beach one day, saw a couple of guys chainsaw carving at the side of the road, and I could not get it out of my head. So finally, a couple weeks later, I went back, and this voice in my head said, you could do this. And even though my family protested, I said, I'm sorry. I mean, this is beyond my control, and it was something I had to do, and I became very, very good at it. You know, it's the reason why I have my house.
Yeah.
It's a calling. I mean, you have to have a healthy fear when you're working with a chainsaw. And in fact, I found that I can't multitask anymore because I've trained my mind to focus just clearly on one thing, which I have to do when I'm carving. Because not just the fact that it's dangerous, but if you make a mistake, you can't put it back on. So, you know, through the last almost 20 years, I've learned that I need to concentrate and make sure I'm safe and make sure that I do a great job. And so, yeah, but I wouldn't trade it for anything. I'll be carving until I can't lift that saw anymore.
Let's remind people that you would have released this album sooner if it hadn't been for an accident. I mean, were you working on a carving at the time and the chainsaw slipped, I guess, did it?
I mean, what happened was, well, the album was finished in late 2010, early 2011, and basically I got shelved, and I actually went out and toured on my own with this record, not even out, just because I couldn't sit around and wait anymore. But I finally kind of came to the realization that this record was never going to come out, but I was carving on the 2016. I was up on a very high scaffold, and I guess I caught an edge. I don't remember it, thank goodness, because it knocked me out, and it is so true. You do not remember anything if you do get knocked cold. So, I mean, I remember carving the foot of a bear, and then next thing I know, I open my eyes, and this retired trauma surgeon who I was carving on his property, I was carving something for him, had ice all over my face, and I was staring up at him, and I didn't know what had happened. I guess the saw grabbed the wood, it pulled me forward, and I fell backwards and broke my tailbone on the scaffolding going down, but I obviously had my wits about me enough to keep that saw away from me. So I fell onto my face, onto the concrete, and cracked my skull and paralyzed the left side of my face for a year. I didn't remember the fall. I took 2 days off, and then I went and finished that carving.
Back on the horse.
Definitely.
And still carving today?
Oh, yes. I've got a big Cigar Store Indian out there waiting for me to finish. But I'm doing the audio version of my book, Neon Angel, Memoir of a Runaway, right now. So between getting the great opportunity to talk to you guys and do this audio book, I get out and work on that Indian when I can.
I'm so thrilled about that. You know something, a friend of mine's father will be listening, and he's a wood chainsaw carver as well. And he actually had an accident where he ended up slicing his thigh to his bone, and it was horrible. It was just horrible. But same. He, you know, once he got better, he was back in the backyard and making his sculptures for other people. I didn't think it was all that popular, to be honest with you, but it's a big thing.
And these sculptures are amazing. I mean, people aren't quite sure. I mean, they're life-size, but the attention to detail is incredible. Mermaids, dolphins, I'm just having a look at a few here. They are incredible. They're huge. Oh, it's amazing. It's amazing. What a talent you have.
It is brilliant. It's
what a
incredible
talent.
You're blessed with so much. We appreciate you spending some time with us today and sharing your talents with us. It's been really beautiful to have you on ABC Radio Perth. Cherie Curry, thank you so much for your time.
You know what? Thank you, guys, because if it wasn't for you, no one would know about this record. And, you know, thank you from the bottom of my heart. It means so much to me. You guys are awesome.
Oh, it's so nice to have you with us, Cherie. Thank you for that.